Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Joy Heft. In the pulpit this morning, we have Dee Evans. We gather to worship, our hearts alive with hope that here we will truly be seen, that here we will be welcomed into the garden of this community. We're the simple and the elegant, the fluted and frilled, the shy and the dramatic complement one another and are treasured. May we know that here, each contributes in their way to the beauty of the whole. Come, let us worship together, all genders, sexualities, politics, clappers and non-clappers, progressive or conservative. May we root ourselves in the values of this faith: compassion, courage, transcendence, justice, and transformation. We welcome you here today. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer a special welcome to those who are first-time visitors. If you are new to this church, we invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your gray hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll be happy to send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about our programs and activities. We are glad you are here and hope to see you again on future Sundays. We have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 4 through these doors to the left and the first room past the foyer. Our formal religious education classes have now ended for the summer, so teens are especially encouraged to participate in the Sunday services, and children are also welcome in church. At the front, we have a spirit chair, which includes activities for all ages. So you are invited to go to the spirit chair anytime during the service and take an activity back to your seat. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. And I have a few announcements. This first one is from Carol, who is in the nursery. Pride Fest 2017 will be held from June 23rd to 25th, 2017 at Soldiers Memorial Park in downtown St. Louis, Missouri. The hours of operation are as follows: Friday, June 3rd, 4:30 to 10:30, Saturday, June 24th, 11 to 9 p.m., Sunday, June 25th, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. A special service will be held at 10 o'clock at the First Unitarian Church of St. Louis. Please arrive by 9:30. At 11 o'clock, we will be taking the Metrolink to the parade. The parade will take place on Sunday, June 25th at 12 p.m. noon. The festival grounds open 1 hour earlier at 11. The theme for Pride Fest 2017 is Community Proud. And then we have an announcement from Mary Johnson. 64 adults and 10 to 15 children came to our personal care distribution yesterday. Thank you to all those who contributed items to add to our inventory. And a big thank you to Mike Acharya, Carol McGrew, Anna Hosier, Amy Leibarger, Sabrina Trupia, and Isabella Navarre for spending a Saturday morning and giving a hand to help people get basic items needed for human dignity. We are encouraging those who come for care items to bring reusable tote bags to take their items home in, and 40 of the 64 people did so, reducing the use of plastic bags. We also had a table full of children's books, which children could take home. With 64 people each getting 2 rolls of toilet paper, plus 4 to 5 additional items, our inventory took a nosedive. So once again, this coming month, we'll be asking for contributions, either of items or cash, plus any reusable tote bags you no longer need, and children's books. And Mary also found an open package with 5 hearing aid batteries remaining, found on a chair in the worker room. And she has that, I think, now. From D. Evans. June 4th will be Dawn's last day. Dawn is in the process of looking for houses to remodel. A great goodbye gift would be a Lowe's gift card. You can either donate a gift card or give money toward the gift cards. All gift cards will be given to them in a card on the 4th. And also from Dee is our annual meeting is also on June 4th, in case you didn't see it in the newsletter. And now let us begin our time of worship with a prelude by our pianist, Nicole Robbins. Please join me in our unison words for lighting the chalice as Debbie Lovell comes up and lights the chalice. We come together every week, not bound by a creed or a mutual desire to please one God or many gods, yet we are drawn together by a belief that how we are in the world, who we are together, matters. We light this chalice together in the knowledge that love, not fear, can change this world. And my opening words are from Ian W. Riddell. It's called Come, Come, Whoever You Are. Do you hear that voice calling you, calling us? That voice which calls us together here today in this room, made holy by our presence and by the sacred breath we share in our singing and speaking and silence. That voice which calls us to remember that we are not alone, and that we are inextricably linked to all of the life, woven into a vast tapestry of existence of which we are a powerful, integral, and holy part. And just as we have been called together here today, we act as the voice, the heart, the hands of another call, the call to walk with the wanderers, sing and dance with the worshipers, proclaim the memory of those who have taken their leave, wrap the despairing and the broken in the arms of love and community, and hold the hands of all of us who have broken our vows and call us back again and again to the covenant and work of justice, humility, and steadfast faithfulness. For this we are here today together. So, my friends, come yet again. Come, let us worship together. Please rise now in body or spirit and join in our opening hymn, 1012, When I Am Frightened, in our teal hymnal or projected on the wall.
Now is the time for story for all children, and I'm not going to ask the children to come up because they have to remain in their pews anyway. Once upon a time, there was a land called Ubap Shabam. This kingdom elected a king and a queen every 10 years. The current king and queen happened to be married to each other. The queen's name was Compassion. If you're wondering why I'm looking at the slides, Joy did them and I haven't seen them. The king and the queen had two children who were twins. The boy was named Sun and the girl was named Moon. One day the queen gave her children some surprising news. They were no longer to be taught by a tutor. They would go to a local school so they could learn more about the world. I protected you from fame and difficult things because you were so young when we became king and queen. Now it is time for you to go out in the world and learn more. So you will be going to school with other children. Your bodyguards will have to go with you, but unless you are in danger, they should not interfere with you. The children were excited, but also somewhat scared. Would the other children like them? The first day at school, they met a girl named Lake. Lake told them that when she was new in school, it took a very long, long time to make friends. So she wanted to invite them over to her house to play video games. Both children were very excited and told their mother, who thought that was great. When the children came home, they ran excitedly to the queen. "Mama," they said, "we had a great time at Lake's house, but she is very poor." The queen was astonished at this because the parliament demanded that the children go to a small, private school so they could easily be protected by the bodyguards. The children described how Lake's house had only 6 rooms, a living room, dining room, kitchen, and 3 bedrooms. But it had a big room called a basement that was all fixed up with sofas and couches and video games. The children said the video games were at least 3 years old, but they had fun anyway and wanted to have Lake over to visit them. The queen looked at the children and said, "Oh, my poor children, I have kept you protected too much. You see, you may have been too little to remember, but we lived in a 6-room house before we were elected king and queen, and your video games would have been 3 years old. This palace is not our house. We only use it while we are elected, and we cannot be elected again. Parliament gives us an allowance for toys. Children, you need to see more of the real world." The next day, the children were taken to a place called the food pantry to help pack boxes of food that people would pick up. They learned that there were people who were disabled, unable to work for one reason or another, sick or old, and needed the food. They learned that if they did not come to the food pantry, they would go hungry. At the food pantry, the children met a woman who said, "Thank God for the queen. If she had not started this food pantry, we would go hungry. The parliament doesn't care, but the queen cares." When the children got home, they immediately asked the queen about her food pantry. "It's not my food pantry," the queen said. "Many people give to the hungry. It is like many things. Really look at a hungry person. If you listen to the hungry person, really listen, you will not let them go hungry. It is that way with many problems in the world. I cannot solve all of them, but they could be solved if we had the will to do so. But if someone comes to you and needs help, even if it is just to hold their hand, then if you give them what they need, you will live a happy life."
The story was written, Dee actually wrote that story. Our offering words come from Jessica Lynn. "I come on Sunday feeling weary, having worn out the snooze button on my alarm clock. I come on Sunday feeling frightened, having seared my eyes reading the latest news. I come on Sunday feeling burdened, having fretted about my workday worries. But I leave on Sunday service feeling refreshed, having been renewed by the spirit of love in the community that exists here. I leave Sunday service feeling whole, feeling lifted up by the words of the righteous challenge. I leave Sunday service feeling energized, ready to continue our fight for peace and justice. This haven, this refuge, this place of worship and wonder exists because we make it so. With our contributions, the gifts of our time, our skills, our food, our love, our laughter, and our money. So please join me in giving so that we may continue to have a place that fortifies and challenges us in these trying and troubled times. May we give in love and peace. Please join me in our unison words to bless this morning's offering. They're printed in your order of service or projected above. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings.
Our reading this morning is from the book Seeing, Knowing, Being, A Guide to Sacred Awakenings by John Greer. Freed from the cramped confines of your ego, you now know your identity with everything, absolutely everything. Whether you look into the eyes of a homeless man, a socialite in a glittering gown, a starving child on TV, an esteemed world figure, your kindly next-door neighbor, or someone arrested for a terrible crime, you are looking into your own eyes, and you know it.
We regularly take time to recognize the joys and sorrows, the celebrations and struggles of this community. We do this by taking a stone or stones from the bowls as we enter at the back of the sanctuary or from the bowl here on the chancel. We allow the stones to focus our awareness on those things most important in our lives. We place those stones in the cleansing water of this community, part of which has been collected during our annual water communion service. If you have joys, sorrows, celebrations, or struggles you wish to recognize, you are now invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow. Thank you.
for our church and our going forward. I put a stone in here for all of our families.
Now let us take a time for a moment's meditation or reflection. Please remain seated and join us in singing the next hymn, number 1053, How Could Anyone, in your teal hymnal or projected on the wall.
Month, our theme is witness. And I would like to share with you a new look at witness. This witness means acceptance of one another, as our third principle says, compassion in human relations, as our second principle says, and the interdependent of web, as our third principle says. I was lying in a hospital bed in March, and I got a diagnosis I didn't want. I was angry, really angry. I had eaten the right foods about 90% of the time. I had exercised. I had done what I was supposed to do. I went to the gym when I didn't feel like it. I tried to get enough sleep, and whatever else they said that you could do to avoid inherited heart disease, I did. I was angry, angry that genetics won out, angry at my mother and my father and generations of my family that they didn't figure out how to do something about these genes. And that was okay, because when I grew up, in my household, it was okay to be angry. But don't you ever show that you're sad. That wasn't acceptable. Don't show you're sad, because we don't do that in our family. And most of all, don't show you're frightened. Now, my way to handle this, because I don't have a very good poker face, was to say I didn't want any visitors. And by saying that, I didn't have to show anybody that I was vulnerable, that I was sad, and that I was frightened. I didn't really care if they knew I was angry, but I didn't want them to know I was sad and frightened. And one day, about 3 days after I'm in the hospital, I'm lying in bed, and the drugs kept me sleeping a lot, which I didn't particularly like, but they did. And I'm just sitting there thinking, this is unfair, but I'm scared. Oh, I don't know what this means. I don't know if it means I'm going to be confined to my home. I don't know that I was just panic underneath it all. And I turn my head to the side and open my eyes, and I see Dawn, who is our minister, for those of you who are new. Unfortunately, our minister, who will soon be gone, but that's all right. And I see Dawn, and I thought, okay, I'm drugged up. I said no visitors. Can't be Dawn. So I turned my face back, and I thought, what if it's really Dawn? Turn back, and there's Dawn. I go, oh, blank. So they walk over to my bed and say, how are you? And I said, fine. And Dawn looks at me and goes, you're in a hospital bed. You're half drugged and you're fine? Well, no. So I thought, well, she says, now how are you? And I thought, well, you want to know, you're going to hear. So all the anger came spewing out. This isn't fair. All those pieces of cake I gave up, all that ice cream. And I'm ranting on and on about the stupidity of the future the past generations, and they're not fixing this problem. I was incensed. Now, of course, somewhere in that, even when in my drug state, I realized how stupid that sounded. So I said, millions of people have this diagnosis. It's no big deal. It's nothing like the people in Syria face. I mean, think about what they face day in and day out. You know, they don't have food. They're getting shot at. They're trying to get out of the country. Then when they get out of the country, they still don't have food, no place to live. This is nothing. And Dawn, and I finally shut up, okay. And Dawn doesn't say a word. Dawn just sits there. And I don't say anything further, but I'm thinking in my mind, oh, the lecture's gonna come about all this anger, I know it. But we sit there in silence. And finally, Dawn takes my hand. And Dawn looks at me and says, but this is happening to you now, here, in this place. It was a paradigm shift, a total paradigm shift for me with those words. There was no lecture. There was no, I'm sorry. There was just an acknowledgement that this was my thing right now, and it was okay. And Dawn went on to sit there. Sometimes we talked, sometimes we just sat there in silence while she held my hand, they held my hand. I learned something that day. I learned what witness meant from a totally different perspective. The first thing I learned is that witness is now. It's in the present moment. It's not looking at how it can change you or move you or make you a better person. It is that utter acceptance of who you are now at this present moment. Now, of course, Dawn being Dawn got to the fear, she got to the anger. But it was in a gentle, gentle way, and there was no move to make me change anything. That utter acceptance is what I needed at that moment. And it changed my attitude totally. It changed my attitude from how terrible this is to maybe, just maybe, with this kind of acceptance from somebody, with no lectures, with no explanations of how this is treatable, of nothing but just acceptance, maybe I can do something about it. Now, please don't misunderstand me. In Buddhism and in a form of therapy called cognitive behavior therapy, there is what is called the dialectic, acceptance and the move to change. The thing that, as a friend, we learn is, and not just as a therapist, is sometimes we just have to tell our friends, get on with it. Sometimes we have to tell them to look for a solution or help them find one. But the moment has to be right for that. Because I don't think my attitude, and I don't think most people's attitudes, change unless someone says, you're just fine the way you are. In your confusion, your sadness, your anger, your fear, your happiness, you are just fine in the way you are. And that is what I learned, that witness can be. You are a witness to someone else's life. And being that witness, you are carrying out our Unitarian principles. The second thing I learned about witness is that it's about the other. Dawn never said a word about what she knew. Never said that this is treatable. I'm sorry, Dawn never said a word about what they knew. Never said it's treatable, nothing. Dawn just talked about me. And that I learned that being a witness to someone else's life is about them and not about the person witnessing it. The focus is on them. Now, that's hard. It's very hard, but words count, and how you use your words count. Now, I'm not an expert at this, believe me. After years of practicing therapy, I'm still not an expert at it. Milton Erickson, who was a wonderful psychiatrist, talks about words. He used to spend hours preparing, after listening to his patients at length, spend hours preparing stories for them in words that matched their world. What he did was very hard. It is very hard to find words that match your client and make it about them and not you. Bandler and Grinder are two people who wrote a neurolinguistics programming series, a whole series of books. And it's about how to use language and other things, but a large part about it, neurolinguistic programming, is how to use language. And learning that system was hard, but it was made all about the other person. Now, I'm going to tell you how easy it is to slip up. Even after years of doing therapy and trying to put these systems into effect, somebody had a miserable job, and I did a good job of listening and decided this woman is not just complaining. This is one miserable job. This person's working for a crazy person. This is not good. And by crazy, I don't mean mentally ill. I mean our colloquial word of crazy is being goofy, okay? She got a new job, and she was so happy. And you know what I said to her? I'm so happy for you. Get that first word. I'm so happy. Natural thing to say. But who did it put the focus on? On my feeling of happiness for her. It would have been so much better if I said, that's great, that's wonderful. I would have been putting the focus on her and keeping it off of how I felt. Now, what I did wasn't a terrible thing. It wasn't a horrible thing. But it wasn't that truly looking and being a witness to that person's life. It was saying a witness to my feelings of happiness for her. I could have even said something like, that's a happy, happy thing. That's great. That would have been better. So I have to, still am practicing about when we witness to someone else's life, making it about them and not about ourselves. The last thing I learned about witness, and I didn't just learn this from Joy, but I did learn that day when somebody could be really silly, as I was in all my ravings and rantings, not to come back with logic and wonderful solutions and a whole bunch of other things that I sometimes do. I learned to just sit there non-judgmentally. If this is the way the person feels, let them feel it. Feelings are momentary. We only want to add some judgment to it if they are going on for so long that they're making themselves miserable. But expressing those feelings was what I needed. If I couldn't get through the silliness of the anger, I would have never gotten to the sadness or the fear. When we bear witness to other people, we're carrying out the principles of acceptance, compassion, and recognition of the interdependent web. I learned a new way of witness. It doesn't have to be to the principles of social justice or literally going in and feeding the poor, though that's a good thing, or giving out products as we do. It can be in friendship, it can be in love. We can bear witness as a Unitarian Universalist to our principles in our normal daily life. Please rise now in body and spirit and join in singing our final hymn, 1008, out of the Teal Hymnal.
We are blessed with love and amazing grace.
standing, and I invite you to join hands with your neighbor. Move so that everybody's holding hands. Hands touch hands. These hands you hold now have held many hands. Hand by hand, we touch those who are here with us and those who are no longer with us. And hand over hand, we touch all of humanity. Let our hands touching hands remind us that we are all connected to each other and the world. It touches us. Holding hands connects us to memories and stories. This helps us in the way we move through the world. So let us go into the world and joyfully carry everyone with us in our hearts. May we go in peace and love.